Welcome to episode 3 of the Fredcast. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Happy New Year, and welcome to the next episode of the Fredcast. I'm glad to be back with you after a little bit of a break for the holidays. Coming up in today's episode of the Fredcast, you can expect the news like we always do every week. In addition to the news, I've got a couple of features. Mostly, they're going to be partly personal. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding, hammer just a little bit harder because here comes the Fredcast. Well, it's been a little while since we've done one of these, and I apologize for that. What with the holidays and going out of town, and things just sort of got away from me. So I'm glad to be back, and I have to say thank you to everybody who sent me emails. I'm going to give shout-outs to each of you later on in the show. So I appreciate your emails. I appreciate all your posts on the website. Please keep those coming. Keep your voicemails coming. All that contact information will be in the show notes as well as at the end of the show. So let's get on with the news. Today is Tuesday here in the United States. It's January the 10th, and today was the day that Tyler Hamilton had his final day in court. Tyler went in front of the Court of Arbitration for Sport on Tuesday in the hopes of having his blood doping suspension limit lifted. Now, you may recall that Tyler won the gold medal in the last Olympics, and shortly thereafter at the Vuelta a España, he was tested for doping, and they found that in a new test, they found what appeared to be somebody else's blood cells in his bloodstream. This is a pretty common doping situation where somebody uses the red blood cells from somebody else's blood to try to get a little bit of a performance advantage. From the very beginning, Tyler has said that he was innocent, and he said that he would fight this tooth and nail, and this really is his last appeal. They argued their case in front of the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Denver. And even at a lunch break, Tyler really wouldn't say anything other than to maintain his innocence. Now, it may be a few weeks, we don't know, until the CAS makes their decision. If they decide against Tyler, he's definitely going to have a hard time coming back. By the time that he'd be back into racing, it would be 2007 in April. He'd be 36 years old, and believe it or not, in elite cycling, that's considered an old man. If, however, they do find in Tyler's favor, it looks like he may be back to cycling as soon as the Amgen Tour of California. Now, it's unclear whether or not he'd go back to the Phonak team. I really don't think that he would, but you may remember that the Phonak really built their team around Tyler. It was their belief that Tyler would be able to be one of the cyclists that could really give Lance a run for his money in the Tour, and they built a whole team around Tyler trying to get the yellow jersey and the win on the Champs-Élysées for him. So we'll see what happens with Tyler. I know that according to his website and all of the information out there about him, that he's really kept up his training and he's trying to maintain his physique in elite shape. So we hope the best for him. We hope that they find for him, and hopefully we'll see Tyler Hamilton back racing in a few weeks. Well, you knew it wouldn't go away. I keep talking to you about the split between the UCI and the three Grand Tours. Tour de France, the Vuelta a España, and the Giro d'Italia. While we were gone, the Pro Tour teams and their association had a meeting, and it looks like the teams are standing firm behind the UCI. Basically, they had a meeting of this group called the AIGCP, which stands for the International Association of Professional Cycling Teams. When they met, following their meeting, they came out with a letter. And the letter basically is standing behind the UCI. They said, quote, "The UCI Pro Teams, who have accepted all of the regulations, confirm their unreserved support for the UCI Pro Tour as it was set up for the period 2005 to 2008, in particular regarding the number of races and the number of teams, etc. They reaffirm their support for the UCI Pro Tour Council to organize this competition." Basically, this is a setback for the Grand Tour organizers, the ones who wanted to set up their own calendar, their own trophies, and their own compensation for the teams. Now, it's a setback, but they didn't exactly declare that they would take a stance against the Grand Tour organizers. But when they declared in favor of the UCI and the Pro Tour projects, the teams really appear to have come down firmly on the side of the UCI. So again, I keep telling you that this is going to be going on and on all year. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because as those Grand Tours approach, I think that both sides are really going to dig their heels in. And who's going to be in the middle is the teams and the riders and, of course, us, the fans. So we'll see what happens. Once again, I'll definitely keep you posted here on the Fredcast. Well, it's time once again for our obligatory stories about Lance Armstrong. He may be a former bike racer, but it just the stories just keep coming. The first one involves, once again, I need a jingle for this, doping allegations. Basically, the president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, a gentleman by the name of Dick Pound, declared a few weeks ago that the doping allegations against Lance aren't going to go away and that they're going to continue to investigate Lance and the possibility that he was involved in doping well into 2006. So here's a guy who's not racing anymore, guy who clearly dominated, who has tested negative time after time after time. And it seems like there's a lot of guys out there who have an axe to grind against him, whether they're racers or whether they're coaches or team doctors for other teams, reporters. They all have this axe to grind against this guy who has obviously just dominated the sport. And these doping allegations continue. So it just seems to me like it's all a bunch of sour grapes. Lance simply dominated the sport. He is, by all accounts and by all studies that we've read out there, he is just a unique physiological specimen, and all they want to do is break him down and say that he didn't do what he did. I think it's a shame. Meanwhile, on a more positive note, while there's a number of Europeans who are trying to tear Lance down, here's some Europeans who are trying to put him back up on his pedestal. The Spanish daily newspaper El País last week declared that Lance Armstrong was the sports personality of the year. That's a big deal because he beat Spain's first Formula One world champion, Fernando Alonso, and Italian motorcycle rider Valentino Rossi in the poll of 100 leading Spanish sporting figures. That's really neat because here this Spanish newspaper has put all these bad things aside, all these allegations aside, and said, you know what, Lance is an amazing individual, won 7 Tours de France, he came back from cancer to win these, and even though our own guy, Spaniard, wins the Formula One World Championship, even though an Italian not far away is an amazing motorcycle rider, we're going to give the award to Lance. So it's nice to see that that there's people out there who are still revering Lance. And you'll remember that Lance makes his home in Girona, Spain. So it's nice that, in a way, he's sort of one of their own and they've adopted him, and he won this award. So congratulations, Lance, on just yet another accolade. This next story should serve as a bit of a wake-up call to all of us who are doing our training outdoors in the wintertime when the weather is less than perfect for riding. 4 cyclists died and several were injured after being struck by an out-of-control car in North Wales on Sunday. Now, this story comes to me from hundreds of sources, Sky News, UPI, the BBC, a variety of small newspapers in Scotland and Wales and really all over the world. I even saw reports of this in the Xinhua News Service from China. Basically, what happened was there was a group of cyclists from a cycling club in Wales, and the group included adults and children, and they were riding near the town of Abergele when a Toyota Corolla, traveling in the opposite direction, lost control on an icy road, veered across the road, and right into the cyclists. The 4 victims were identified. One gentleman was the chairman of the bike club. He was in his 60s. One was a committee member of the club. He was 49. One was 42, and the last child by the name of Thomas Harland was 14 years old. The group of 12 cyclists came from a cycling club called the Ryle Cycling Club, and they were on a 50 to 60 mile round trip ride when the crash happened. So personally, I mean, I can really relate to this. This is the kind of thing that I would be doing on the weekend, going out, going for a nice 50, 60, 70 mile ride. And the last thing you expect is that when you strap on that helmet in the morning and you get on your bike, you expect to come home and you expect to see your family. Basically, what it sounds like is that it had rained the day before. Overnight, it got cold. The rain froze. There was a patch of black ice on this road, and apparently where the crash occurred, there was a curve. And it really wasn't necessarily the driver's fault, I mean, unless he was going too fast. And this is currently under investigation, according to the BBC. But it sort of serves as a reminder, please, please, please be careful out there. Cycling's all about having a good time, about enjoying yourself, about staying healthy. And so let's just be careful out there. Okay, on a more positive note, a piece of news from the cycle touring slash fundraising front. The largest nonprofit sporting event in Texas and the largest event of its kind anywhere in the United States, the BP MS-150 ride in Texas, is celebrating its 22nd year in the fight against multiple sclerosis and has reached its registration capacity. Now, that may not seem like a big deal for those of you who go out there and you ride maybe an MS-150 or an AIDS ride, and I don't know, maybe they get 1,000 to 3,000 riders. How about 13,000 riders? The BP MS-150 goes from Houston to Austin, takes place every year. It's a 2-day event, and they have 13,000 cyclists participating. The tour this year takes place on April 22nd, and it finishes in the state capitol in Austin on Sunday, April the 23rd, after there's an overnight celebration in LaGrange, Texas. It's a 180-mile trip. Again, it starts in April, and they've already registered 13,000 riders. It's really, really amazing. Over the last 5 years, participation in this event has increased over 45%, and in its history, this tour has raised nearly $60 million to end the devastating effects of multiple sclerosis. So it's a really amazing event. I have friends who have actually gone there from California to participate in this event. It is supposed to be just a rolling party. So too late to register for this year. If you've already registered, that's great. And by the way, if you have registered, please let me know, and maybe you could be an on-site reporter for us. I would love to hear what it's like to ride with 13,000 other people and what that overnight party must be like. So congratulations to the chapter of the MS Society there in Texas for registering all those people and for raising all of that money. Here's another bicycle tour that you might want to think about doing next year, because it's about to start this year. It actually starts this weekend. This is the Tour d'Afrique 2006. It is getting ready to start on January the 14th, and this one's pretty interesting. If you're an endurance cyclist, here's one for you. The Tour d'Afrique is an annual ride. It is a 12,000-kilometer bicycle race, and they bill it as a bicycle race slash expedition. It goes from Cairo all the way down to Cape Town, and it's billed as the most grueling bicycle race event on Earth. Basically, they go through 10 African countries in all, traveling past ancient temples, through game reserves. They get to see all the wildlife. They go in the foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro. It really is just an amazing ride. I would love to do this. I don't know who has the time. Essentially, it takes approximately 120 days. And of those days, 95 are cycling days. The cyclists cover an average distance of about 75 miles or 125K each day, with a rest day every 5 to 6 days. Now, this year, they have a record number of cyclists participating. They're looking at 44 cyclists who are planning on riding the entire distance, all 12,000 kilometers. In addition to those, there's another 20 who are going to be riding one or more of the sections of the ride. Participants are coming from Holland, the UK, Germany, Canada, Belgium, France, Switzerland, Hungary, New Zealand, the United States, and South Africa. This is really cool. You can follow this ride on the website, and I've put a link in the show notes. I'm planning on following it because I'm really curious how many of those 44 are actually going to make it all the way to Cape Town. And I'm really hoping that there's a lot of pictures. This would be a really, really cool ride. I'm always impressed with myself when I do a century. Imagine 12,000 kilometers. Now, as if that weren't enough, the organizer of the Tour d'Afrique has also started another tour. This one takes place in Central America. This one's called the Temple to Temple Ride, and it is a 7-day, 450-mile, well, they're calling it a jaunt, across Belize. basically, the gentleman who organized the Tour d'Afrique and the gentleman who's organizing this, his name is Michael de Jong. And his newest, well, it's a race or an expedition, depends on how you're planning on doing it. But it's slated for beginning January 29th, and it goes through February 4th. It is billed as Central America's longest adventure bike race, crossing jungles, mountains, and the ruins of Mayan temples. So if you're a Survivor fan, you know that they were recently in Guatemala in the Mayan ruins, and here we are in Belize in the Mayan ruins, and this is definitely a Survivor of sorts. Basically, the field of riders is going to be limited to about 100. Registration is $1,500, and it covers meals, services along the route, and pre- and post-race stays at a very beautiful hotel in Plasencia down there in Belize. This is another one I would love to do. Maybe next year. It just looks amazing. So I'm going to be checking that one out on the website as well. And I have put a link to that website in the show notes for today's show. Meanwhile, a little bit closer to home, the UCI's Track Cycling World Cup Classics are returning to the U.S. on January 20th, 21st, and 22nd. At the ADT Event Center at the Home Depot Center in Carson, California. Now, this is the United States' only indoor velodrome, and it is a great venue. Now, World Cup races are the most prestigious of the UCI calendar, and they give riders and countries the opportunity to qualify positions in the upcoming World Championships, April 13th through the 16th, in Bordeaux, France. Tickets are available. I've posted links in the show notes, both to the Home Depot Center and to the company providing tickets for this event. You're looking at more than 200 athletes from 36 countries, including the United States, that are going to be participating in the three-day event. And it really should be very exciting. If you've never seen track racing and you're anywhere near Southern California, this is a really great event. Very different from road racing. If you go to the Tour de France, one of the things that everybody always says is, you're standing in one spot, you're standing there for hours, waiting, and then the peloton comes by, and in about 2 seconds, they're gone, and then that's it, your day's over. The nice thing about track racing is you really get a chance to see these athletes up close and really get a chance to see what they can do over the entire length of their race. So again, if you are in Southern California and you're interested in seeing some really great cycling, it's just coming up in a few days' time. Get yourself some tickets, go down to Carson, and enjoy. Speaking of racing, but racing of a different type, and another kind of racing that I really like to go watch because it is really exciting, the Norbin National Mountain Bike Series. Once again, we've got some changes to it. I think in each of my shows I've mentioned changes to the series. Basically, what they did was they've added a seventh event to the series this year, and they've also changed the dates and location of the very first event. I will put the links in the show notes to the schedule, but basically what they did was the first event was supposed to be at Frank G. Benelli Park in San Dimas, California on April 22nd and 23rd. Now the season's going to be beginning May 5th through the 7th at Southridge Park in Fontana, California. So it's really not that far from San Dimas. And they've also added another event, and this one's taking place in Sonoma, California, up in the wine country at Infineon Raceway, and that's going to be July 15th through the 16th. It's funny to me because as I look at the schedule, there are definitely two locations that really stand out to me, at least as somebody, a West Coaster, that you usually see on the Norbin National schedule, but which aren't here this year. One of those would be Big Bear, and if you don't know why, that's because basically mountain bike racing is over in Big Bear. That was an announcement that was made last year, and that's really, really sad. There was so much mountain bike racing that took place up in Big Bear, California, and I'm really sorry to see that go. And then the other one that's missing here is Mammoth Mountain, home of the Kamikaze Downhill, and it's very strange not to see that on a Norbin National schedule. But go ahead, go to the show notes, click on the link, and you'll be able to find out where you can go race or where you can go watch. And finally today, in our quirky news item of the week, and perhaps in a little bit of tribute to this holiday season's movie Chicken Little, the sky may actually be falling if you're a cyclist in England. It appears a cyclist was riding near an RAF, or Royal Air Force Base, there in England, and he had a near miss with an auxiliary fuel tank from a Harrier jump jet that was being flown on a routine patrol or a routine training flight from an RAF base. Basically, here's this 10-foot long metal fuel tank falling literally out of the sky when it fell off this Harrier jet, and it fell literally inches from this cyclist. Cyclist's name was Les Sprassen, and he lives in the village, and he said he was just riding along. We've all heard that before. When this fuel tank just spiraled over his head while he was riding down this country road, he said, "I thought I was going to die because it's going to explode, and then I'm finished." Anyway, the tank fell from the jet, landed in a field with a thud, and thankfully it was empty. And although there was just a little bit of residual aviation fuel in it, nobody was injured, although I have to say Mr. Sprassen was a bit scared. Now, I love this when these military guys are really... they're like the kings of understatement. It says in the story, an RAF spokesman said that the auxiliary fuel tank came away from the aircraft and that it was not jettisoned. In other words, it fell off. So if you're riding in England and you're near an RAF base and they're flying Harriers around, please wear your helmet. Okay, tonight in our feature section, usually I give you one main feature, but there were so many different topics I wanted to talk about, and they were all kind of small, so I just sort of put them all together, and I thought that I'd just, instead of giving you one major topic, just give you a couple of small ones. And first, I want to talk to you about something that I did over the holidays that I'm going to be talking about from time to time on the Fredcast, and that is I finally went out and hired myself a coach. If you listen to the last podcast, hopefully the 2.1 version after the GarageBand hiccup was fixed, you know that one of the things that I mentioned in the Fredcast holiday gift guide was hiring a coach so that you could become a better cyclist and train smarter. I took my own advice and I hired a coach from Carmichael Training Systems. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the CTS website where you can learn a lot about what it is that they do. I'm paying for it, so for full disclosure, I have no connection to them other than the fact that I am a paying and so far very satisfied customer. Just to give you a little overview of what they've done, first thing, obviously, I signed up on the website and filled out a very, very detailed questionnaire, not just about what kind of a cyclist I was, but also made me think a lot about what my goals were for cycling, short-term goals for this year, as well as long-term goals. And I'm not going to necessarily share those with you, but in general, that would include things like my goal, again, is to ride 12 centuries this year, and as long as I don't get an injury like I did last year, I think that that won't be a problem. But in addition to doing the 12 centuries, I want to put in at least one, two, maybe three double centuries. And in doing those, I also want to get faster and stronger, and most importantly, I want to train smarter. When I did get my coach on the line, on the telephone, and we talked a little bit about my cycling and progression of my training, I explained to him that I've always trained like a gorilla, and by which I don't mean a gorilla fighter and a soldier. I mean a gorilla, big ape. I just basically get on my bike and I go as far as I can, as fast as I can. I really don't have a plan. I don't do intervals or any really smart training. And what I've learned in the last week and a half of being an athlete who uses a coach is that there are definitely way smarter ways to train. I can feel myself getting stronger. I know that I'm training smarter, using a lot of metrics that I'm gathering through my heart rate monitor and my Garmin Forerunner, and I can just tell that I'm training smarter. So I'll be telling you more about this in the weeks to come. I'm hoping that I'll be able to get an interview with somebody at CTS who can tell us a little bit from their perspective about what it is that they do. So I just want to let you know that that was happening and that I took my own advice. And if you took my advice as well, or if you're already a coaching subscriber, whether it's through Carmichael or some other service, I would love to hear your experience. Send me a voicemail on the Fredcast voicemail line. I'll give you that at the end of the show. Send me an email, maybe an audio comment in the email. I'd love to put it online and know what your experience has been with coaching. Now, along with my coaching, one of the things that I've really started to use, again, more intelligently, along with training smarter, I'm starting to use my tools smarter as well. And one of those tools that I'm using smarter is something that I did in my very first Fredcast. I gave you a review of the Garmin Forerunner. Now, I know some of you out there are groaning because some of you felt that that review was a little bit too long, but I really wanted to get detailed into it and give you a lot of technical information about it. So I apologize if you thought it was a little long, but I know a lot of you out there really liked it. One of the things I only mentioned in passing in that review was the training features that are in the Garmin Forerunner. Now, one of the things that I mentioned to you was that you could do interval training. Now, up until about a week and a half ago, I knew what interval training was, but I'd never actually done it. Now that I've done it, I have to tell you that I am loving the interval training features that are in the Garmin Forerunner. Every day I have a different workout that my coach has designed for me, and it always includes a number of different intervals, and those intervals change from day to day as far as what the exercise is that I'm going to be doing on my bike, whether it's a spinning exercise or it's a muscle exercise or a cadence exercise, whatever it is. And what I've done is I can program each of those into the Garmin Forerunner. So, for instance, today I had one that was a climbing exercise, and I programmed the Forerunner so that for about 20 minutes I was just trying to maintain a certain heart rate, but I really wasn't doing the exercise. And then when it was time to start the interval, it gave me a 5-second countdown so that I could gear up to where I needed to be, that I could make sure that I was in the right position, and then it counted down for me how long I needed to be doing the exercise, and then it counted down for me how long my rest period was, and it made sure that I stayed within the heart rate range that I needed to be in, and then it repeated for the number of intervals and the number of reps that I needed to do of those intervals, and then when those were done, it started counting down until the duration of the ride that my coach had designated for me was finished. Fantastic. I can concentrate on doing the exercise and let the computer concentrate on making sure that I've got the heart rate I need, or that I'm doing the distance I need, or that I'm riding for the amount of time that I need. So I have to tell you that I'm just loving that feature of the Garmin Forerunner. And as you all know, I'm looking forward to getting a Garmin Edge when that comes out and getting rid of the Forerunner on eBay or someplace like that. And so I'm really hoping that the Garmin Edge does the exact same thing, because if it does, I think it's going to be just the perfect accessory for my cycling. Now, you'll remember that another thing that I mentioned about the Garmin Forerunner, something that I told you that I didn't like, as you know by now, I'm a Mac user, a very, very dedicated Mac user. I use both Mac and PC, and I can use them both equally well, but I prefer the Mac. And one of the things that I don't like about a lot of Garmin products is that they just don't have support for Macintosh. And so I have to keep a PC in the house, or I have to borrow one of my kids' PCs when they're awake so that I can download all of my information, whether it's from my Forerunner or one of my other Garmin GPSs, because I'm also a bit of a GPS geek. Anyway, what's really nice is today was the opening of the Mac World Expo up in San Francisco, and this is the big trade show for all the Mac geeks and all the people who make Macintosh products around the world. Coincidentally, Garmin announced today that it's going to immediately begin to make its line of GPS and mobile electronics devices compatible with Mac OS X. I'm totally stoked. They said specifically that they're planning on having all of their popular hardware and software ready for OS X by the end of 2006, and beginning in spring, they're going to be offering a Mac version of their training center software, and that's the software that you need to interface your Forerunner or your Garmin Edge that's coming out soon to your Macintosh product. I am really, really excited about this. Now, another thing that happened is a few months ago, Garmin purchased a website called MotionBased, and I think I talked about this on a previous Fredcast. And MotionBased is where you're able to upload all of your data, and it will show you a wide variety of metrics from your Garmin unit, so that it'll tell you what your heart rate was on a particular climb and show you your heart rate on the same graph as the elevation, and it'll show your ride on a map. It just has a wide variety of features, and I'll put a link in the show notes so you know what it looks like. But what's really nice is that they're also planning that by the spring of this year, they're going to have an upload interface that will be Mac compatible. So not only will you be able to use the training center software on your Mac, not only will you be able to connect your GPS, whether it's your Forerunner or your Edge, to your Mac, you're finally going to be able to take all of that through your Mac and put it up to MotionBased. So I'm really excited about that. I think it's going to be great for all of us who are using these electronic gizmos on our handlebars. Okay, and finally tonight, I just wanted to mention, you know, I know a lot of you, at least I hope, a lot of you out there may have gotten MP3 players, specifically iPods and iRivers and things like that for the holidays this year. And so it's very tempting to put that thing in your jersey pocket and string those headphones into your ears and go out for a ride. Admittedly, I ride with an iPod almost every day when I ride. But because I've been riding with an iPod for so long, I think I've learned a few things that I'd like to pass on to those of you who may be really new to cycling and wearing headphones at the same time. Let me give you a couple of tips. Number one, check your local laws. At least here in California, the law is that you are allowed to wear one headphone. You can't have headphones in both ears. So if you are out there riding and you do have your little white earbuds or whatever you've got in both ears, as far as I know, the police are able to stop you and cite you. As a matter of fact, I'd be really interested to know if any of you out there have actually been stopped by the police for this and whether you've actually gotten a ticket. And if so, what the fine was and what the officer may have said to you when he stopped you. So send me an email on it or a voicemail on the Fredcast voicemail line, or send me an audio comment, and I'll definitely put your voice on the air. I'm very interested to hear if any of you have done that. So number one, please make sure you check your local laws. Number two, if you haven't ridden with headphones before, I really recommend that you don't start on a group ride or on a really busy street or on a sentry. Go out, find a relatively quiet street, and get used to it, because it can be a distraction if you're not used to it. So go out there and give it a try. Whether you know your state allows you to wear both headphones in both ears, which I think you won't find very many that do, or even if it's just one, it's definitely a distraction. And we really do use our ears a lot when we're cycling to know what's around us, specifically what's behind us and just beside us. So get used to it before you do it. Next, and this is something I learned the hard way. Make sure that whatever your MP3 player is or whatever music player you're bringing with you and putting in your jersey pocket, make sure that you have a really good case around it. I used to just put my iPod in my jersey and go riding just with it in my jersey. And then one day, as I was coming back from a ride, I caught up with my wife and kids, and they were out walking the dogs. And one of the dogs saw something in the bushes or something, went running after it. And so I stopped short and I sort of tumbled over. It was sort of a slow speed crash. And when I did, my iPod hit the ground and it got dented and it completely mangled the hard drive. And I actually had to put a new hard drive into the iPod. And ever since then, I have a hard plastic case that goes around my iPod, and it's form-fitting, specially made for the iPod, and I really feel that it would protect it if I ever did crash and the iPod got hit. I think the case would get destroyed, but I think the iPod would be okay, and for the amount of money that you spend for one of these things, I think I'd rather sacrifice a $10, $15, $20 case for a couple $100 iPod. The next thing I sort of wanted to mention, and this is pretty funny, the BBC on their website, you may remember a couple of months ago, there was a big hoo-ha about what songs President Bush had on his iPod. And as you also may know, President Bush is a pretty avid mountain biker. He likes to go mountain biking every day. And he wears his iPod when he goes cycling. So the BBC has on their website a place where you can go on. It's sort of like a blog, and you can post comments when they post questions on there. And one of the questions that they posed was about George Bush cycling with his iPod. And so I'm going to post a link to that discussion on the website because it's pretty funny. It's really interesting to hear the suggestions of various people about what they thought that Bush should be listening to on his iPod. And then, of course, there are those who are sort of cycling purists who went on there and said, hey, he's mountain biking. He should be, listening to the sounds of the woods and the sounds of the wilderness and trying to listen to other trail users that are out there. Anyway, it's pretty interesting. Go ahead and check out the show notes and click on the link, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Also, another thing that I found on the web, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes, is here's a guy who is, this guy is a real Fred. He he doesn't have the nicest bike in the world, which is fine. I mean, you know, you can be an aspiring Fred too. You don't have to have all the high zoot equipment just to be a Fred. You can aspire to have all the equipment. But what he did was, you may remember when you were a kid and you had a headlight on your bike and it had a little generator. And when you flicked a switch, the dynamo of the generator would lean up against one of your tires. And as the tire went around, it would turn the dynamo and the generator would create electricity. And that's what would light the light on the front of your bike. So here's a guy. Check it out on the web by clicking on the link in the show notes. He took one of these dynamos and he has this very long weblog, this blog entry explaining how you take one of these dynamos and you hack it so that it can charge your iPod while you're cycling. It's pretty funny. I think you'll enjoy it. And finally, if there are those of you out there who have been riding with your MP3 players for a long time, I'm curious to know whether this has ever happened to you. Every year at Thanksgiving, we have a tradition in our family where before we eat, we all are sitting at the table and we're just getting ready to eat and we ask, what are you thankful for this year? And it was really interesting. I went for a ride this year before Thanksgiving, before our Thanksgiving dinner, and I had my iPod on, and it was really interesting that it seemed like, even though I had my iPod on shuffle so that it would play random songs just from my entire playlist, everything that was on my iPod, and I have a couple thousand songs on there, it seemed like for about a half hour period, every single song had something to do with gratitude or being thankful. And it was really a strange thing. And in looking around on the web, it sounds like other people have had these sort of weird experiences too with the shuffle on their iPod. So I'm interested to know from those of you in the Fredcast audience, have you ever had one of these experiences? And again, if so, send me an email or an audio comment or a voicemail. I'll put your voice on the air. I'm really interested to know if you've ever had one of these weird experiences where you were thinking about something or there was something that was going on in your life and your iPod all of a sudden popped up with one of these songs. It was just so apropos for that moment. Okay, that's pretty much going to do it for us this week. I'm doing my training that my coach has prescribed for me, and I'm also getting ready for a century this weekend. I'm doing the Wells Fargo Stagecoach Century, which is taking place down in Ocotillo, California. And if you're not familiar with Ocotillo, it is in the very, very, very far southern reaches of our state, almost near Mexico, and it's midway between San Diego and Yuma, Arizona. Looks like there's going to be about 1,000, maybe about 1,100 of us on the ride. It's an out-and-back course. And what makes this course unique is that it's on a very, very deserted sort of highway out there in the middle of the desert. And the scenery is supposed to be spectacular. We're looking at about 5,000 feet of climbing. And one of the things that makes it really unique is that even though it's an out and back course and it's on a highway, there's only one stop sign on the entire course. And apparently it's a pretty rusted stop sign. Not many people go through there. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's great to be getting back into shape and be doing my first century of the year. I'm hoping if I can get all of my hardware to cooperate that I might be able to record a little bit of audio for you, sort of do a sound seeing tour as I'm doing the century and maybe talk to some of my fellow cyclists as I'm riding along. I hope that works. If it doesn't, I'm sure it will on one of the other centuries I'm going to do this year. And if you're going to be out there on the Wells Fargo Century, send me an email. Let me know what you're going to be wearing or what kind of bike you're going to be on, and hopefully we can hook up. I'd love to meet some of the Fredcast listeners out there. So no matter what you're doing this weekend, if you're doing something fun or you're doing a great century, let us know. It's always great to hear about it. So thanks for listening to the Fredcast. Before I go, let me let you know once again how you can contact us. Again, I'm hoping to have a forum pretty soon up on thefredcast.com. It depends on how much time I have this week to get that up. You can always send an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. You can leave a voicemail at area code 206-203-FRED. You can send audio comments to the email, or you can always leave comments on the Fredcast website. And before I go, I just wanted to sort of send a shout out to some of the people who have sent me some emails and who have posted some really nice comments on the website. So shout outs go to Noah, Daniel, Bob, Billy, Bobby, and on the website to Bob, Craig, Tim, Jerry, Bill in Santa Fe, Christopher in Chattanooga, Larry, and all of you who have sent me really nice voicemails and emails. Thank you very much for listening. Stay subscribed to the Fredcast. I've got a lot of really great shows planned for you over the next couple of weeks. I've got an interview coming up that I know you're really going to be interested in. Some aspiring Fred, some endurance cyclists, and I'm hoping to get some additional interviews lined up for you in the next couple of weeks. So stay subscribed. Coming up next is, as always, our PodSafe cycling music, and it comes to us from music.podshow.com. It's a song called Life in the Stars by a band named Berman, and I've put a link to their own personal website in the show notes. So again, thanks for listening, thanks for downloading and staying subscribed to the Fredcast. I hope you enjoy the music, and most of all, enjoy the ride.
It doesn't get